Hello and welcome. I'm Alec Hogg. You've read the headlines on biznews.com, watched the interviews on BizNews TV, and caught up with BizNews Radio. So now let's talk about what the latest developments mean for your money. This is the Editor's Desk exclusive analysis for BizNews Premium members. It's Monday, the 15th of December, 2025. Glad to have you with me. Well, this morning, Mr. Price Group finally broke a very harsh couple of days on the JSE when the share price dropped sharply after the news that it wants to make an acquisition in Germany for 9.6 billion rand. Mr. Price's share price this morning was a little bit firmer, and I say a little bit because it's at 181 rand a share, up about 1.25%. The shares have come from 211 rand a share, so they've dropped by more than 20 rand a share since that announcement was made, the first day seeing a real big knock and closing on Friday. After getting off the bottom of 172 rand, it's now at 181 rand. But I'm not sure how long that's going to last. And I say this because there was yet another respected asset manager who's joining the fray to say, stop it, Mr. Price, do not make this acquisition. And that story is on BizNews this morning. That's Adrian Clayton, nearly forgot your surname. I know him pretty well, known him for a long time. He is with North Star Asset Management, a company that he founded some time ago, and he acts as the chief investment officer. A little bit like what Si Jacobs does at 361. North Star is not the size of 361, but Adrian's got his followers, that's for sure. And in the open letter, which was sent to Mr. Price over the weekend, he talks about the differences between the two companies, how Mr. Price's profit margin's about 9.5% and this German company, NKD, is under 2%, and how revenues in the last 6 years at Mr. Price have grown by 11.5% compounded, whereas NKD is just over 3%. So there's a huge, well, a chasm between the two businesses, and Mr. Price going into the graveyard of South African retailers, which was International Acquisitions, is not making Adrian very happy either. And the feeling around there is the price to earnings ratio, which has always been around, not always, but it generally around 15, 16 times, this is for Mr. Price, has suddenly collapsed all the way down to just over 11 times. And that, in his opinion, is a needless destruction of shareholder wealth. And he's urging them, as did Si Jacobs, to reassess, rethink, and relook at the incentives that exist for the executives, which are not necessarily based on what is good for shareholders. And this is a big thing. And something I'd like to spend a little bit of time just talking about. It's all about incentives. I remember learning about this some years ago when Warren Buffett made the point about if you get the incentives right, if a business has got the incentives right, then that business will flourish. And his concern was that often the incentives were skewed from day one. For instance, the executives pick out the people that they want on the remuneration committees. And as a consequence of that, they are friendly towards the executives. Perhaps they even owe their position as a non-executive director to executives in the company. And the consequence of that is, well, they will treat those executives more favorably than they would otherwise. And Buffett's got a word for it. He says, you need Dobermans on the Remco, not Cocker Spaniels. And that is pretty much the sense that one gets when you have a look at the way that executive remuneration has mushroomed in recent years, particularly in the United States, but it isn't much better here in South Africa. A similar kind of situation that shareholders are now starting to say, hang on a minute, we need to address this. I made the point last week that I felt that if the executives of a company want to do something as aggressive as this, fine, but then tie their own incentives to the success or failure thereof. They've already got the upside from the success because they're using shareholder funds to do these deals. But what about if it goes wrong? What about the clawback for shareholders from those executives? What about the executives having their necks on the line as well? Maybe that kind of thinking is what underlies what we've heard from Piet Viljoen first, then Cy Jacobs, and now from Adrian Clayton. Bringing that whole story of incentives back to a part that we all can kind of understand. I was reminded of this over the weekend when Jeanette and I popped off to a place called Rivergate Farm just outside of Stanford. Stanford's 15 minutes or so, a little town, little village really, a bit bigger than a village, but a little town that is to the east of Hermanus. And what tends to happen, or what tended to happen, was that people who weren't comfortable living at the sea and wanted to live inland on a river would go off to Stanford, which has an interesting history. It was a British soldier who convinced a local farmer to sell him the land so that he could develop it. This is 150 years ago. And his name was Sir Robert Stanford, and hence the name of the town changed into being called Stanford, and it attracted a lot of people from abroad as well as locals who've made a very pleasant, a very lovely little village. But the story here is not to do with Stanford, the town, but to do with Sandra and Vaughan Cumming, who own Rivergate Farm. Now, they were the owners of a family business in printing. They sold their printing business, a sizable business, and decided their printing business was in KZN, in Durban. And if memory serves correctly, it's a private deal, so not too, there would be a lot of publicity about it, but they sold it to Andrew Bonamore and his Hirsch & Carter operation, which is the one part of what was the old Tissot Black Star, which really did work well. Anyway, they sold the business and decided not to stay in KZN, but to relocate to a farm, which they bought just outside of Stanford. And the investment by these entrepreneurs into the farming on the one hand, where they're producing, that's Vaughan's area, tens of thousands of eggs through their chickens, their free-range chickens, and on the accommodation and hospitality area, which is Sandra's focus, where they have built up a sizable business, made this enormous investment that's gone into it. And here's the point. They saw the Western Cape, and in particular this area in Stanford, as a much more appealing destination for their capital than in KwaZulu-Natal. And they've brought a lot of advantage to this part of the world, created an enormous amount of wealth for everybody around. I don't know about the family themselves, because as having farmed myself, I remember that the old adage was, well, if you can make a 1% return on invested capital in farming, you're doing well. And I often thought, well, why go farming in the first place? And it's all to do with independence and to do with owning your own day and doing what you really love. But that's beside the point. What sparked this thought was over the weekend going to the Christmas market, which we've seen develop over the last 3 years, from relatively small to an incredible operation. There were hundreds, if not thousands, of people who were there, hundreds of exhibitors, and beautifully organized, plenty of parking. But being in the rural area, it reminded me of those movies that you see about celebrities starting farms, and then you have these long rows of motor cars trying to get in or going into the parking area of the farm, and lots of people, lots of vibey things happening. And clearly in this case, it was actually, for me, the last time I'd seen this kind of long queues to get into the parking area was as a kid, when my father used to go to Kyalami every year to watch the Formula One motor racing. And I can remember that we would sit in these long queues. It's the one thing I remember, the races, of course, but sit in these long queues to get into the Kyalami racetrack. So that's the memory spark that came to me. Very popular. And I just thought more about it. And what these two entrepreneurs from KZN have done for this area, and the value that they've added to those hundreds of exhibitors, many of them, as you have on most Christmas markets, would be handmade, homemade products, sold at reasonable prices and very well supported. And that's what the politicians just don't get. If you can make a environment safe and a place where, as a human being, you feel, well, I will invest the capital that I've sacrificed hugely for over many years to build in this area because I find it safe, and I think there's a good chance of that capital not being expropriated by some fool who just happens to have got voted into a position of power by other fools, well, then I would be happy to make that investment. There's something that you might, those of you who've read Atlas Shrugged, Ayn Rand's classic, which has been ascribed with changing a whole generation of Americans from being sucked in by the post-World War II socialism wave, and instead seeing it for what it really is. If you've read that, there's a guy there called John Galt who is the hero of Atlas Shrugged. And eventually what happens is that the entrepreneurial class gave up on being abused for, well, indefinitely by the bureaucratic class, the political class. And they went off and started their own community, their own place, where they took their skills, they took their capital, they just buggered off. And they went off and to this new area where John Galt and co. had this very flourishing community with entrepreneurs or people who believe that they should be entitled to the rewards that they get from risking and from sacrificing, rather than giving over everything to a collective where sacrifice is stupidity, because you're going to be given the benefits of the sacrifice of others. That's pretty much socialism, the way it works. But anyway, that is happening now in real life in the Caribbean. We've got a piece today from the Financial Times of London, which is really worth reading. I put a title on it, on the real life John Galt, and it's a wealthy Bitcoin investor who has established a libertarian community on a Caribbean island, part of a country there, well, part of Nevis, which is a part of St. Kitts and Nevis country, a tiny little country. And the place that he lives in is called Prospera. It's a gated community on an island run by a Delaware-based company. And it's attracted $150 million in foreign direct investment. It's got more than 4,000 jobs created. And it's now suing the St. Kitts and Nevis government for some, I'm not going to spoil it too much for you, But I do think that it's well worth reading. Story about a guy called Janssens, Olivia Janssens, who is a modern day John Galt. Fascinating. Is Janssens the only one doing this? I don't think so. I'm sure there are other parts of the world. It just so happens that the Financial Times has picked up on this libertarian project. If you consider Javier Milei in Argentina, that's his whole thesis. His whole thesis is if you take away from people who are producing things because they're prepared to sacrifice, they're prepared to work, say, for 14 hours a day to sacrifice for the future. But if you make it impossible for their future to have any benefit from those sacrifices, well, they'll stop sacrificing. And that's what Argentina's 100-plus year of socialism has taught the country. That is the Milei story. That is a story which Chile, the neighbor of Argentina, they're on the west of South America, Argentina on the east of South America. And Chile has now, over the weekend, abandoned its socialist project, and it has voted in, the population there, voted in a Milei-type person. And now you get the story coming out of the Caribbean community. And I then read that the ANC, or people appointed, remember these guys aren't elected. These are people within the ANC who go to branch meetings and become senior in the branches, and then they get appointed by the ANC to parliament. They didn't stand for any election in a community that could elect them. These people are now saying, no, we don't want Starlink in South Africa because we want the BEE employed in Starlink. So they're now having a full go at Solly Malatsi, the DA's communications minister, who's seeing a much bigger picture. And if you were to ask the public of South Africa, do you want Starlink because it's going to cut your internet access by half and you can have it anywhere in the country? You're almost certain that those people, the majority of South Africa, would overwhelmingly vote for it. But now you've got this little group of almost Ayn Rand-type political class, political elite and bureaucrats who are saying, no, 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 you can't have that. We will decide what you can have and what's good for you and what isn't good for you. Are they creating their own longer-term demise? Maybe, maybe. Because I think I'm often reminded in this day and age of Serge Bellamont, who started the company that's now known as Lesaka. It used to be called NetOne. It used to be Aplitech before then. And we shared offices in the same building. We didn't share offices, but we were in the same building, President Place. And I would often see Serge downstairs. We had there was a little cafe there within the building, and he would have lunch there every day, which pretty much I used to do as well. And from time to time, we would just chat and have lunch together. And I remember Serge telling me, because they worked at the bottom end of the market, he said, please don't believe that because people are poor, that they're stupid. They're anything but stupid. They just haven't had the opportunities. But they know what's going on. And when you look at what's going on with Starlink right now, and the resistance suddenly that the ANC political elite are expressing because they want their 30% BEE, which pretty much everyone in South Africa, I think the latest rating were well over 50%, know this, and they say we don't want this BEE stuff anymore because it only enriches an elite class. But they're bad actors are trying to now kibosh something where Elon Musk has said, we will invest $500 million into rural schools. But you can't have that, rural schools. You can't have that, Elon Musk, because there's a political class who want to eat. Sickens me. consequence of it, though, as much as it sickens me or not, it's kind of irrelevant, is that you will have more and more of these kind of Olivia Janssens popping up, not just in the Caribbean, but perhaps here in our own country as well. Isn't it interesting? It's an interesting time that we're going through, and you can circle back to what North Star's Clayton and 361's Jacobs and Reece M's Viljoen are saying to the board at Mr. Price. No, your incentives are all wrong. No, this is our money. We're the ones who actually own the company, not your management. No, don't go and destroy our value, our shareholder wealth value. If you really want to do this, show us why we should all be on your side. Don't just make it an edict. Politicians have got elections, but elections only work if the people who do the voting kind of get what's happening. I believe Serge Ballamont is right. I believe people in South Africa are not stupid. They might be, just because someone's poor doesn't make them dumb. And the real issue here with Starlink is the internet actually empowers people. When you have internet access and cheap internet access, not the hugely expensive internet access we have, relatively speaking, in South Africa. When you have cheap internet access, which Starlink will bring to this country, then the people who do not have the access at the moment to that real information, who often are acting and voting from a position of ignorance, are then have their eyes open, and that stops the political class, the elite's ability to eat. And the way they eat through corruption is the greatest cancer that is holding this country back. It makes sense, doesn't it? Well, it certainly does to me. Okay, we're going to be talking on more focused areas on Wednesday. I've got the day off with you tomorrow. Remember that the every last Tuesday of the month, we look at our BizNews portfolio. If you're invested in either of our Ricardo portfolios or our Shift portfolio, please join me on Wednesday. I've got I'm not going to give you any hint, excepting to say we will be making some changes. So come and see, quiz me. It's noon on Wednesday. You're a premium member, so you will get an invitation in your premium newsletter, and I look forward to that interaction. Well, I'm going to leave it there for today. I hope you have a wonderful day of reconciliation tomorrow. Keep an eye on your premium newsletter for links to our freshest published content. Thanks for trusting us with your time. I'm Alec Hogg. Until Wednesday, cheerio.